Thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law.
'Cause I'm the tax man.
Call in now with your tax questions at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And Andrew Foster joins us this morning. Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Good morning, Ben. Doing well.
We had a call on Wednesday. I believe it was Ron in Beaufort was asking a question about taxes and the hurricane, about taking losses. What do you hear now?
Yeah, so still trying to monitor whether or not they're going to pass the bill. I mean, we mentioned some of the issues with the casualty loss rules, regarding the fact that you need to itemize your deductions in order to take casualty loss rules. We mentioned some of the limits, meaning if you've been reimbursed by insurance, you're not allowed to take that. We mentioned the $100 rule, that silly little $100 rule that's there. And then the fact that there's the cap on it, that you need to reach above a certain threshold in order to take any casualty losses.
And that you may be able to go back and
go back another year. Yeah, that's right. You can go back 1 year with regards to casualty losses. But we mentioned
even this year.
Yes, yeah, exactly right. So you can go back to 2017 when likely maybe more people were itemizing their deductions
than you would this year.
The interesting thing is that, you know, the bill that we mentioned where a lot of North Carolina House reps were getting together to propose taking some of these limits off. And that was really what I think is going to be critical for taxpayers in this region.
Kind of moves it above the line.
That's exactly right. So then you get an above the line deduction, meaning that you don't have to itemize. And then also take some of those caps off. So, you know, that $100 rule goes out the window. The 10% cap that we talked about, that goes out the window and you can take it all. So, you know, that's going to be the interesting bill that, you know, you and I were talking about before the program. We think that maybe after these midterm elections, kind of the lame duck session of Congress will probably take that up. And, you know, with the hurricane, down in Florida, probably going to package those two together. I could imagine. Hurricane Florence, Hurricane Michael.
This has been done in the past.
Exactly right. We had Hurricane Irma get this tax relief. And I think that's going to be the critical issue, Ben, because if that bill does in fact get passed where we start taking some of these caps and limits off of casualty losses for taxpayers that are affected in this particular region, that bill is going to be critical. And I think that's going to open up, you know, a lot more of taxpayers to be able to take advantage of these casualty loss rules, and, you know, really get some benefit on their tax return for unfortunate devastation that's occurred in our area.
Well, in fact, it looks like Ron in Beaufort did call in this morning, so let's go ahead and get his take on it. Hi, Ron. How are you?
Hi there. Yeah. Yes, my question basically was, my adjuster was Ray Charles. He saw nothing, knew nothing, and he's like Sergeant Schultz. So, I mean, they gave us an estimate on repairs, and then the contents were way off. And my question is, yes, we're going to get compensated for something, but the actual losses are way more. I mean, you know, like $38,000 in tools and other things, personal property and stuff that they just close their eyes and didn't look. So does that have to do with taxes?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. So it sounds like you're going to be in the position, Ron, where casualty losses are going to be taken advantage of on your particular return. And certainly what I'd tell you is that, you know, documentation, pictures, any type of evidence you can get regarding the value of the items. And, you know, take advantage as much as you can on the tax side of things. But I'd also say, you know, potentially, you know, give us a call at the office, 726-9050. I think that likely we want to take a look at maybe what you've got there, because your adjuster may not have done you justice on the front end, and you may be able to pursue, you know, some action with the insurance company in order to get some of those losses compensated through insurance. And then obviously what doesn't get compensated can be taken advantage of on your tax return.
Well, also the other question is, 3 years ago we had to get the flood, and he went over, oh, you got this, you got that, you got that tool, that tool. And then on the codes on the bottom of the insurance policy, it has absolutely nothing for contents. Is there some sort of error, malfeasance we can go against the agent because he didn't
It'll depend.
Put zero down for contents.
It'll depend on your declarations page and lots of other things.
That's right. I mean, the best thing you can do, in all honesty, Ron, is get your policy together and seriously, mm-hmm. just make an appointment with our office and come in and sit down with us and let us take a look at it because, you know, I hate to say it's so specific, but it really does get down to the fine print. And get down to, you know, just because one thing says this, maybe there's another section that we can find you some coverage for.
Right.
So really it's framing it up and it is policy by policy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
All right. But those are important things. I mean, we were talking earlier this morning about people. This will take years to fully adjudicate and recover all these things.
So. It's definitely the truth, Ben. And I think that, you know, again, I've got my ear to the, to Congress at this point in time, especially regarding these tax issues, because I do feel like something's going to get passed. I mean, I just feel like, and I'm, you know, I will come back and report and obviously we'll publicize it very, very heavily, hopefully once we get a bill passed. And if it doesn't by the end of the year, then of course I'll go over again specifically what the rules are. So our listeners can take, you know, can look at it. And then again, if you want to sit down and talk with me, you know, afosterharvellandcollins.com, give us a call at the office, 252-726-9050, and we'll be happy to sit down and talk with you regarding these issues because again, you know, there's just so many people that are affected.
Mm-hmm.
So many people in our area that have damage. I mean, I'll be honest with you, even with my minimal damage in my house, I'm still not quite sure what it's going to be. So,
right.
You know, there's a lot of individuals that are out there in that same kind of boat, who, you know, unfortunately it's just unknowns.
Okay.
So, you know, we're going to continue to work through those issues and obviously we're a resource, and we'd be happy to help anybody out, navigate through these waters.
All right. What else do we have today?
Well, you know, Ben, I get a lot of questions about timing issues,
mm-hmm.
and obviously timing is critical with regards to the tax law. You know, and one of the things we get is how long, you know, can the IRS audit a return? You know, what time frames am I looking for? You know, because maybe I took a position on a return that I'm not quite sure about. You know, what am I looking at? How long do I need to be concerned about that? And the short answer, Ben, is that the typical standard statute of limitations for the IRS auditing a return is 3 years. And it's 3 years from the date that the return is filed, unless you file early. So if you file before April 15th, then you're going to be deemed to have filed on April 15th.
Okay.
So let's say you file in March. Deemed
so the filing deadline.
Deemed to be filed on April 15th. If you file after April 15th, then the date that you actually do, in fact, file that return is going to be 3 years from that particular date that
so
they have
April
to
audit. April 15th or later.
Yeah. Okay. So you're looking at that being your you know, your critical time period. And, you know, the 3 years, as soon as it runs past, you can feel fairly confident that your return is safe unless you have substantially understated your income. And what does that mean? That means if you've omitted more than 25% of your particular income. And Ben, this is a you know, again, we talk about how income is a broad definition.
Right.
The service looks at this as broad. There was a case out there that a taxpayer won, and Congress actually changed the law. They basically overstated their tax basis in a particular item, and so their gain or loss was significantly less, and so they paid less income tax. And they argued, well, we didn't understate our income, we just overstated our basis. And guess what? They ended up winning that case.
They won that one.
But the Congress passed the rule and said, no.
That's income too.
That's income too, and we're going to give you a 6-year statute of limitations for auditing a return where we have a substantial understatement of income on a particular return. So, you know, the general rule there, Ben, is, well, I guess I should also say one other thing that can affect your statute of limitations is your foreign financial reporting. So we mentioned how you have the obligation to report any ownership in foreign bank accounts. And if you omit more than $5,000 of reporting these foreign bank accounts, that's going to give a 6-year statute of limitations on audit for purposes of the IRS. So just be aware of that.
On the misrepresenting your basis, is that like capital gains thing?
Yeah, you know, exactly right.
Misrepresenting the house.
Yeah, so, you know, the example is that you, let's just say that you had, you know, $1 million basis is what you thought you had, mm-hmm. and you report you sold it for $2 million, so you poured $1 million of, mm-hmm. Of capital gain. But really, your basis was only
$200,000.
Yeah, you know, you've understated your income. And mm-hmm. like I said, that was a winner in the tax court. But a loser because Congress went back and said, no, that's really understating your income. Mm-hmm. So it's a fairly broad definition. So, you know, generally speaking, you know, when I'm talking to clients, we're talking about the 3 year, but I'm also mentioning, look, to be on the safe side, 6 years, you know, is kind of your drop dead date, mm-hmm. For lack of a better term. But the fact, Ben, is that keeping your records for these particular years, obviously we want to be 6-7 years, but some of your tax records can really affect your returns for the future, you know, for a long time. I mean, you know, for instance, we'd mentioned tax basis earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, you keep records on improvements for your house, mm-hmm. because you don't know when you're going to sell your house.
Right.
And that all those capital improvements all affect your tax basis. And so when you do in fact sell mm-hmm. your particular piece of property, which could be 10, 20, 30 years down the road, mm-hmm. those are all critical documents to establish your tax basis and what your gain or loss on that particular sale actually is. So, you know, it's difficult to say how long you should keep your tax records, because general rule would be 6 or 7 years because of the audit rules. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's some certain documents that certainly need to be kept beyond that time period,
right.
because they're going to establish your tax attributes for a later date. So, you know, be careful about these. Know these timing rules, mm-hmm. but don't view them as hard and fast rules because there's exceptions to every single rule.
All right. Once again, we learned a lot of great things in just a short period of time from Andrew Foster. AFoster@HarvellandCollins.com, or call them for an appointment, or stop by on Bridges Street in Moorhead City at HarvellandCollins.com.